Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Follow the Money right after this. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Well, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. Public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper are things like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, debt, and usury. Back in 1965, Congress said that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin, or clad coin, or currency. And that's very true when we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper, and there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper versus the gold and silver coin. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew, and they knew as a matter of law, that gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and our politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that if they were going to subject a free people, they must first take away their gold and silver coin to take away the people's right to own property and to destroy the people's property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we're going to have to first regain our property and property rights. And that's because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me teach you how to do just that. And that's in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult homeschool. Now, if you'd like more information about our private business school, call and order our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. You don't know if you're ready for school yet. Find out. So the general law CD package is a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. And once again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. So if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email, send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, last time we were talking about how to buy a house. Here in America, we believe that buying a house, living in the suburbs, is the American dream. I showed you last time that if you buy a $50,000 house, pay 6% interest over 30 years, you're going to lose almost $100,000 on the transaction. That's a net loss. Comes right out of your paycheck. So I said, shucks, you know, it looks like to me you'd be better off down at Flo's Whorehouse. You'd have more fun or burning up airplane gas or doing something more constructive. But that's not the American dream. The American dream is to buy a house and make those interest payments so that you can buy one house for you and two houses for the banker. And it's ingrained here in America. It's ingrained. It's like religion. It's a duty. You have to do this. All right, now let's take a look at the other side of this. The opposite to this would be, well, what if we didn't buy this house? What if instead of buying this house, one for us and two for the banker paying usury and interest, what if we waited, or what if we bought silver instead? So let's go back to our 1955 time frame, 1955 to 1985, back in the era when the inflation rate was running 4.7% per year. Today, it runs 4.7% a year. Somebody gains from all of this inflation, or we wouldn't have it, because between 1787 and 1933, we didn't have any inflation at all. If you take a look at consumer prices in 1787 and 1933, they were the same. But once Franklin Roosevelt got into office in 1933, things began to change. We made some momentous changes. We abolished gold and silver coin. Gold first, and then silver 20 or 30 years later, 1964, Lyndon Johnson took the silver out. And President Nixon said, well, wait a minute, we're not going to pay off in gold anymore. We're going to quit doing that. Now, there's a repercussion that comes from doing that. There's a benefit that you receive for practicing gold and silver, and then there's a curse. There's a penalty that you receive. Something happens when we practice paper, when we use unjust weights and balances. Now, my mail and my telephone tell me that many of you people out there are very concerned about the world's economy. The voters out there are real concerned. You know, they want to vote for Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. There's some changes need to be made. Well, the implosion of the world economy isn't the fault of George Bush any more than it's the fault of Herbert Hoover for the last Great Depression. The mechanism that is in place that is going to produce this economic or this financial debacle is already in place. It was in place for a long time before George Bush, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, Richard Nixon ever came to office. They're a part and parcel with the problem. And my point is that they can't solve this problem because it's a mathematical problem. It's a certainty problem. It's going to happen no matter who you elect president. It's irrelevant. It's going to happen. And now we're too far along in the process to make any meaningful change in the national economy, to make any meaningful change in our relationships, you know, with the Chinese or the Japanese or anybody else for that matter, in our trade negotiations or trade policies. So the switch is set and the train is roaring down the tracks. Now, the wise thing, in my view, to do is to get off the tracks. This train is going off the tracks. It's time for you to get off the tracks before the train runs over you. And in order to do that, we should understand the operation of gold and silver coin. If we buy a house and we lose twice as much, we buy one house for ourselves and two houses for the banker. In other words, if we lose twice as much by buying a house, how much would we make or how much would we save if we bought gold and silver? Oftentimes I hear people say, well, you know, you can't get any interest off of gold and silver. You can't make any profits off of gold and silver. That's why you should be buying stocks and bonds and in real estate where you make profits and gain. Well, I pointed out to you, I mean, there's people that make profit and gain off of real estate, but it's not the buyers. You know, there's people that make profit off of a crap table, but it's not the players. Now, there's property to be made in gold and silver, not profit. And as I pointed out last time, you know, Christians can't count. Well, the reason that we're unable to count is because we don't listen to the scripture. We don't listen to the economic laws of the Bible. From 1787 to 1933, boys and girls, we practiced the Ten Commandments. And we became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world using gold and silver coin rather than paper money as our means and medium of exchange. From 1933, when we abolished gold, to 1964, when we abolished silver and used paper money, we've become the world's number one debtor nation, and the world, using our reserve currency, is about to go into a great economic black hole. Now, something changed. I'm not here to tell you that the Ten Commandments are superior to the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Shucks. I think you can figure that out for yourself. My conclusion is that it's a vastly superior program. Let's take a look at the numbers and let's see what happens when we use gold and silver. If I buy a $50,000 house and my brother buys $50,000 worth of silver in the same period of time between 1955 and 1985, who's going to come out better? Well, we saw that my house buying cost me $90,000 plus. So I had a $90,000 plus loss that comes from buying the house on a 30-year contract. So let's take a look at 30 years in silver and see what happens. So in 1955, I paid $5,000 down on my house payment, and my brother Jim paid $5,000 and went out and bought 5,000 silver dollars. We're both working at Mutual Plywood, both have the same incomes. We're going to work here at Mutual Plywood for the same 30 years, and we're just going to do it a little differently. My brother's going to buy silver, and I'm going to buy a house. I'm going to be wise, and I'm going to invest my money. And my brother's going to be foolish. And he's not going to invest his money in real estate. He's going to invest his money in silver. Silver coin that pays no interest or dividends. And let's follow it through and see what happens. So from 1955 to 1967, 13 years of payment of $297 a month comes 12 times 13 equals $46,332. Remember, that's the principal that we're going to pay on our house. So for 13 years, I'm paying $297 a month. Well, let's suppose that my brother takes the same $297 a month, and instead of spending it on a house and making house payments, he spends it on buying silver for the same 13-year period. What would happen? Well, he has $5,000 down, and now he has $46,000 worth of silver. So by 1967, he has all of the $50,000 worth of silver already bought and paid for. He owns it, free and clear, and he buries it in a hole in the ground. That's all he ever does, he just buries it in a hole in the ground. Well, $297 a month invested in silver for that same 13 years is $45,000 plus $5,000, $50,000. So at the end of the period, the silver is worth 10 times what was paid for it, or $500,000 in 1985. That's right. The price of silver in 1985 went from $1.29 in 1955 to $500,000, 10 times more, the $50,000 multiplied to $500,000. That's the history of it. So my profit was $45,000, which equals four cars. Remember that yesterday on the house example. Well, my brother's profit was $500,000 less the $50,000 now that he had to pay in principal for the silver. So my brother pays $50,000 principal for silver. I pay $50,000 principal for a house. But my brother ends up with $450,000, and I end up with $186,000, which after we took the cost of goods sold, that is the cost of doing business with this house, I ended up, after I paid my taxes, with $46,000, which equaled four 1985 Chevrolet automobiles. So my house transaction ended up with four Chevrolet automobiles, which was a net loss of $92,000. See how many automobiles I lost? 92,000 divided by 11,000. That equals, if I get my numbers here straight, let me try this one again. 92,000 divided by 11,000 equals eight. So I lost eight cars in that 92,000. But watch, it gets worse. My losses mount as my brother's silver gains in value. So my profit was $45,000, that equals four cars. My brother's profit's $500,000 less the $50,000, that equals $450,000. Now my brother's sitting there with $450,000, but he's got to pay tax on the profit. So the capital gain tax is 28% of $450,000. That's $126,000. So you take $126,000 from $450,000, and he nets $324,000. Divide that by $11,000, and that equals 30 cars. Now, boys and girls, how much are my house payments? It's one car a year. Remember, one Oldsmobile a year, one Mercury a year, one Buick a year I'm paying on my house. My brother's got the silver. He gets the full 30 cars. Can you follow that? The full 30 cars. Doesn't lose a dime. In addition, he made an extra $24,000. Now, that's one car a year, which is exactly what he should have been saving every year. Now, where did my brother live? Because that's always what people, yeah, but where did your brother live? Lived in an apartment. He lived in an apartment. And I bought a house. Well, he spent all of his money on rent. No, he didn't. No. Get your pencils out here, boys and girls. Write down the numbers again. Remember, I told you last time, I said I never met a Christian that could count, never met a Jew that couldn't. And this is where propaganda comes in. Somebody profits from all of this propaganda. Somebody profits from all this inflation. Somebody profits from the crap table, but it's not the players. Somebody profits from all of this real estate, but it's not the homeowners. And somebody profits from all the gold and silver, but it's not homeowners. And it's not crap table players. Remember, they gambled all their money away, or they threw their money away buying houses. Now, that's why I say, you know, buying airplane gas doesn't make any money, but it produces a lot of pleasure. And going down to Flo's Whorehouse doesn't produce any profit, but it produces a lot of pleasure. So if you're just looking to burn the candle at both ends, have a good time, light up a camel, sit on your ass, and watch the world go by. And that's what people have been doing, you know, for the last 75 years. But if you want to make a buck, then listen to this. Where did my brother live? Well, just take 17 years of interest, which was $62,100. Remember that? On the house. We paid 6% interest at $62,100. At $172 per month to pay for his apartment. For 145 months, savings to build his own home for $25,000. Hey, listen, my brother at $172 a month makes enough money that he can build his house for $25,000, save his $50,000 in silver, sell it, and get a car per year in profit. And when he gets all through at the end of 30 years, he's going to have the same house, but he's not going to be paying all the interest for it. So if you want to take if you want to make a $1,000 purchase, for instance, with a 20% tax rate, the first thing you have to do is make $1,250 so that you can pay your $250 tax. That leaves you with $1,000 so that you can go out and buy something. Now watch what happens when you're paying this income tax rather than tithing. See, a tithe is on property, and the tax is on profit. And the question, who makes the profit off of all of this inflation? And the answer is it's the government. The government makes all the profit off of the inflation, and that's because the inflation tax, which averages 4.7% a year from 1960 to 2000, is collected by all of the storekeepers that take your money and pay it over to the government. You see, the government creates the money out of thin air. They can't create gold out of thin air. That's why government and bankers hate gold. It's because they can't create it. Only God can create gold. And that's why God told us to use gold in our transactions and don't use usury. Avoid that usury like AIDS, herpes, and VD.
That's why he gave us a law that says thou shalt not steal. It's the basis of personal property rights. Without it, you can't have property. It's the exact opposite to the first plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for the abolition of all right to property. Every one of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto is an opposite to one of the 10 commandments. And it's designed to put you into perpetual credit debt serfdom, bond servitude. Now, bond servitude isn't necessarily all bad. There are people that Jesus said, the poor you have with you always. There are people who are poor. We call them Christians. And they're poor because they break the law. If they didn't break the law, the 15 economic laws, then they would have wealth. There are 33 benefits that we all receive for practicing the law. The law is made up of the 10 commandments and all of the statutes, judgments, and commandments that are used in support of the basic law called the 10 commandments. So you have a commandment that says thou shalt not steal, then you have a supporting statute that says you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag, which is supported by a statute that says you shall not charge or practice usury. Now, usury is mentioned in the Bible 23 times, and there are several statutes that prohibit the use of usury. So when you buy a house and you sign the contract and you say, well, I'm not charging usury, I'm the victim. No, you're not a victim. You're an accessory before, and you're an accessory after the fact. You are a co-conspirator in a capital felony, making your mortgage payment every month, making your car payment every month. You're a capital felon. Now, it just so happens that God is not executing capital punishment yet for your crimes. That's coming. And he told us in Deuteronomy 4, he says, now what I thought to do to those other guys over there is what I'm going to do to you. I'm going to do to you what I told you I'm going to do to them. And if you don't pay attention to me and obey me, keep my commandments. And so, you know, we gave him the finger. He tried to send us to school, but, you know, we evaded that. Now, let me show you about this income tax over here. Let's suppose that you're in the 20% bracket. Forget 40, 80, or 90%. You know, under FDR, the tax, the income taxes, this graduated income tax. It went up from 1% back in 1914. It went up to a 91%. Now, it's come down. You see, back in the Reagan years, they discovered that they had overtaxed us. And it was bringing upon the economy a premature death. And so they drastically lowered taxes. Now, that ought to tell you something. You see, if tax is good, if the income tax is good for you at 10%, then 20% ought to be twice as good. If a 20% income tax is twice as good as a 10% tax, then a 40% tax ought to be four times as good as a 10% tax, at least twice as good. I mean, it ought to really stimulate the economy. It ought to do something really, real neat. So after having experimented with the heavy progressive income tax at the heavy progressive rate of 90%, they discovered, well, the confiscatory tax puts everybody into credit debt serfdom, but it destroys the economy, so they had to lower the tax. So now they're in the process of fine-tuning it. So President Bush comes along. Remember, in his tenure now, he's given us these tax cuts. They're not giving you any tax cuts. No. No, you people have been, you've been watching Katie Couric too long. There are no tax cuts. George Bush has not cut your tax burden by so much as one copper penny. Not one cent. He has increased your taxes. Increased your taxes. But see, tax increases aren't very popular. So we don't want to come along and tell you people that we're going to increase your taxes. That's the Democrats' tax and spend routine. So the Republicans come along and they say, well, look, you want to vote for us because we cut your taxes. And when the Democrats raise your taxes, they're a little more direct about it. When the Republicans raise your taxes, they're more devious. Here's the way that works. It's called the alternative minimum tax. And this is a tax on the middle class. And the objective is to destroy the middle class in America. And that's because the wealthy class believes that they're smarter than the poorest class. And they even think they're smarter than the middle class. And they probably are. Hell, I wouldn't take it away from them. I would concede that George Bush is probably smarter than I am. Went to college. Got a letter after his name. In fact, in the Bible, God tells us that the wise of the world, you know, are much wiser in their ways than the people that obey God and keep his commandments. In fact, he tells us that. And you take these economists and you know, all these politicians, these are very bright people. Very bright people. And they're not failing to balance the budget because they can't count. They're not failing to balance the budget and rein in inflation because they're ignorant people and they're just dumb and we need to vote them out of office and vote smarter people in. Don't you believe for a moment that Osama, or, oh, not Osama, it's Obama. You don't believe for a moment now that Mr. Obama is smarter than George Bush or Dick Cheney. That ain't so. Or that John McCain is some kind of a dummy and that he doesn't know which end is up. Mr. McCain, very bright boy, very bright boy. Now, these people know exactly what they're doing. The people that don't know what the hell's going on are the people that buy houses and can't count. The people that use paper money instead of gold and silver coin. Those are the poor fools that don't know what's going on. Those are the voters that are voting these very smart people into office. And it doesn't make any difference whether you vote for a Republican or a Republican. Either one is going to get you the same end. And these politicians aren't going to save you. And don't waste your time praying to Jesus, because he told you he ain't even going to listen. He not only ain't going to save you, he said, I ain't even going to hear you. That's the bad news. I mean, we can't even talk to him now. I know the Christians are out here praying. You know, I told you about my old buddy. Had cancer, you know, Mr. I'll think of his name here for a second. Wegner, Mr. Wegner. I used to call him Wagner, but he corrected me, a German fellow. And he had cancer, so he's praying to Jesus every day. And if I had cancer, I'd be praying to Jesus too, or somebody. But anyway, he prayed every day, he finally died. I woke up and I said, well, you know, praying to Jesus when you have cancer doesn't cure cancer. Now, that was my first-hand observation. Now, people get religious and they get superstitious and one thing and another, and I wouldn't say that Jesus can't cure cancer, but see, you people are causing your own cancer, and we call this in law the proximate cause of your own injury. So the economic debacle that we're all just about to experience is being caused by our own proximations. That is, we ourselves are causing it. We are the proximate cause of our own injury. So God said, well, this is the way you people wanted it. Now, we want paper money. We want stocks and bonds. We want the income tax. We voted it in. We vote for the politicians that continually give us all of these benefits of paper money, usury and interest, banks and banking, securities and the Securities and Exchange Commission, the income tax, inheritance tax. We vote for this. We create our own laws. We create our own politicians. We have our own lawmaking body. We do not follow the laws of Moses. We do not practice the Ten Commandments, kids. You got that? All right. Now, as a result of that, there is a question as to who benefits or who profits. And the answer is the politicians, the bankers, and big multinational corporations all profit from inflation. So in program number one, I showed you Bretton Woods from Franklin Sanders' article in this month. It was the January issue, January 2000 issue of the Money Changer. Bretton Woods, it's a built-in program. Outsourcing your job to China is a built-in program. It's designed to destroy you. And the first thing we do is we take away your gold and silver. We did that in 1933, 1964. Second, we now have to impoverish you with debt. We've accomplished that goal. We have buried you in debt. Third, we need to take your job away from you and outsource it to China. We've done that. Now, you're working in the service industry. Now, the last step in the program is to force you to take the mark of the beast in Revelation 13:16. I told you about that yesterday or day before. All right, now there's the game plan. Now, hang on, there's more to come, but I got to give you a mid-course reminder here to keep the government and the FCC and all the good folks that sponsor our program happy with me. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet 7 days a week. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be political, hostile, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our webpage, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about follow the money. Follow the money has to do with subsistence and survival and how to make $100,000 on 25 acres or less. So I told you now, I'm expecting some dire consequences from our actions. We Americans, Canadians, Australians, New Zealanders, we Western Europeans. Indeed, you people in Korea and Africa, all around the world, we have all bought into this communist ideology, this communist program. And there's going to be a repercussion that comes from it. You know, you wring your nose, you get blood. Now, when we deal with the income tax, there is an outfit that makes a lot of money off of the income tax, and it's called the government. Now, all you have to do when we take a look at this income tax is to do a little arithmetic. So get your pen and paper out here, and let me show you a little arithmetic here. If I get over here to my ads here on tax, I've got a little section in here with all these numbers right in front of me. Number your page about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 9, 10. Run it up to 10. And we're going to give you some numbers here, and then you can get your calculator out and you can test these numbers. Let me show you how the government profits from this heavy progressive income tax and how you take it in the shorts. Let's suppose for the sake of our discussion over here that you want to buy a motorcycle, a used motorcycle, for $1,600. And you've got a 25% tax rate. So number one, write $1,600 times 0.25, 25%. And over here on the far right column, put down the tax, which is $400. So you go in here and you buy this used motorcycle, and the price of the used motorcycle is $1,200, let's say. Well, you've got to earn $1,600 so that you can pay your $400 tax, so that you can net the $1,200 so that you can go pay for it. Now, the guy that earns $1,200, the guy that makes $1,200 worth of profit when he sells these motorcycles, he has to pay a 25% tax, and his 25% tax is $300, and so he nets $700. All right, so the next guy over here, or the tax rather, that he has to pay is $300. So if you add the $400 plus the $300, now we're up to $700. Notice that in two transactions, the government ends up with $400 the first round from $1,600. The guy that makes $1,200, he has to pay $300, and so the next round of tax over here takes the government up to $700. Now look at the third round, number three. That guy now has $900. If you pay the tax, 25% of $900. And then number four, you pay the tax on $675. And then number five, you pay the tax on $506.25. Number six is you got to pay a 25% tax on $379.68. And then number seven, the number is $284.76. Number eight, it's $213.57. Number nine is $160.17. Number 10 is $120.12. If everybody pays a 25% tax, then the government at the end of 10 transactions has $1,509.90 out of the $1,600 in 10 transactions. Now, if I had a scam like that working for me, then I'd want inflation also. I would want paper money. I would want an income tax. I would want an economy. I would want the same system that we have today. And it's what we call the Ponzi system. It's the Ponzi system. And what we do is we actually pay you, like Social Security in the early days. You paid in 1%. And you drew out $80 a month. God, it was a hell of a deal. You had more people paying in than you had drawing out. But as time progresses along, the numbers change. And that's where the world economy is today. Over 70 years of playing Ponzi, the numbers change. And as these numbers change, the economy changes. Pretty soon you get to the point where you got more people drawing out than you have people paying in. And then you're upside down. You're bankrupt. That's where Bank of America is. That's where Citicorp and Chase Manhattan and J.P. Morgan and so on. These companies are bankrupt. The American government's bankrupt. Now, there are winners and there are losers in this process. Now, if you're a homeowner and you've got a house, you're the loser. Your chance of recovering any of your investment, your chances of getting anything out ended about June of 2005. That was the peak of the market. From that point on, you couldn't sell those houses. Well, you couldn't sell all of them. And so you've been watching the housing industry build up bigger and bigger inventory as the losses, that is the valuation that you thought you had in your house, which is what we call blue sky, just blue sky. It's not real value. It's just what we imagine that we have. What you actually have in the way of value is what you have in your pocket. If you own the house free and clear, you had an asset. If you have a mortgage on the house and you have a liability. Americans don't have assets. They believe that their balance sheet is an asset. It's not. It's a liability. All right. Now, can you spell balance sheet? Can you say balance sheet? Let me show you how that works. A balance sheet is the total amount of assets that you have. So you list your assets. You say, well, I own a house. I own a home. And so you put down asset. So I'm take out another piece of paper over here, boys and girls. Let me run through this asset thing for you. Let me show you a balance sheet. And so we start off top of the page, you write balance sheet. And then over here on the side, you write 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And let's put down all of our assets. So we start off with our house. And we say, well, what else have we got? Well, we got three cars. Okay, so put down car number one, car number two, car number three. Maybe it's a Chevrolet, maybe it's a Toyota, maybe it's a Ford. What else have you got? Well, I've got my 401k. All right, put that down. That's an asset. What else you got? Well, maybe you've got a snowmobile, and maybe you've got a vacation home. Maybe you've got this or that or something else. You write all those things down. Those are called your assets. Now, in the next column over here, you write down your liabilities. And those are your payments. Those are your debts. And you say, well, let's see. My MasterCard, that's a debt. That's a liability. Well, how much do you owe on that? Well, I owe $10,000 on that. Okay, well, how many of those credit cards have you got? So you list all your credit cards. And well, how about your house? Remember, you got that listed as an asset over there. Well, the debt that you owe against your house is called a liability. And so most people, they bog down right here and they say, oh, my God, I don't know how much I owe on my house. Very simple. When did you buy it? How many payments? What are the payments per month? So if you've got a house and you've been making payments on it for 10 years, then you got two-thirds left over. So you take 360, that's 120, 240, 360, and you're paying $300 a month. So you got this $50,000 house, and you got 240 payments left to go times $300. You got a $72,000 liability. Now remember, you put your house down as an asset, remember? You paid $50,000 for your house. How many dollars did you think that house was worth? Because you owe more money on it than the house is worth. You know, you people were upside down the day you signed the mortgage. Can you understand that? Now, there isn't a Jew out there that doesn't understand this. There ain't a Christian out there that ain't scratching his head and saying, well, wait a minute, how could I buy a house for $50,000? I'm only paying $300 a month. All right, now, watch this. Watch this. When you signed the mortgage contract on your $50,000 house, you signed a contract and agreed to pay $300 a month times 360 payments. You signed a promissory note. Do you remember the promissory note? Can you say promissory, boys and girls? You signed a promissory note for $108,000 on a $50,000 house. You promised to pay $108,000 for a $50,000 house. And then you paid the guy $5,000 down. Down. And then on top of that, you paid a bunch of other things that you didn't even know were going to be added onto this. You know, like prepayment penalty, balloon payment, points. You know, you didn't even count that, and so I'm not going to burden you with that. Christians can't count to start with. How the hell are you going to figure in all of these abstracts? And so you got $108,000. Hell, you're upside down the whole mortgage. And then somebody comes along and says, oh, but wait a minute, your house is appreciating in value. Excuse me? What? Yes, your house is gaining in value every year. It's worth more money. Oh, to hell, you beller. You got to be out of your cotton picking minds. The inflation tax is 4.7% a year, kids. Boys and girls, you got to make a 5% inflationary increase in your house every year to break even. To break even. No. Your house value didn't go up 5% a year compounded for 30 years. I showed you that in the last program. Your salaries and wages aren't going up. I showed you what happens to you. The price of filling a tooth in 1955 is $5. In today's dollars, it costs $105 to fill the same tooth. And the dentist up here, last time I went in to see the guy, charged me $105. You know, I got to make 21 times what I was making in 1955 to break even. And I'm not making 21 times what I made in 55, and neither are you. Neither is anybody else. So bottom line is, we're constantly taking it in the shorts on what we call inflation that we don't even count. So we say, well, in nominal dollars, my $50,000 house is worth $250,000. But boys and girls, there's a thing called cost of goods sold. Cost of goods sold. And you got to factor that in. You see, in the insurance, upkeep, taxes are your cost of goods sold. It's the costs of doing business. And buying a house is a business transaction. It is true, you do have to have a place to live. But you don't have to have this $108,000 house to live in. Remember, my brother lived in a $172 a month apartment, saved $50,000 in the first 13 years, ended up with $500,000 worth of assets, bought a house at the same time, paid cash, built it himself for $25,000. Now let me show you how to build a house. I'm sitting here in my office in a pretty good sized house. It's a 4,000 square foot house, 4,000 square feet. Now I added a porch around. It's a wraparound porch. It's 2,000 feet. That's 6,000 feet. We got a greenhouse on it. That's another 500 feet. And then we got an attic up there that I fixed up so that I could store stuff. So I've got 2,000 feet of attic. I got 2,000 feet of main space. I got 2,000 feet of basement and 2,000 feet of porch. Now my wife built the basic house for $7,000 in 1968, 69, and 70. In 3 years, she built this house. How do you build a house for $7,000? You build it yourself. Or, as her second husband said, it's an owner-built home. And what she did, she went to Springfield and she bought three houses that were scheduled for demolition. And she bought them for $500 each. That was $1,500. And she went to Seymour and hired a gang of Amish men to go dismantle the houses. And she made several trips with a ton-and-a-half truck from Springfield to Isabel and hauled all of the boards, building materials, back here to the farm. Total amount of investment was $7,000. Labor and material into the building materials. Then she and her husband went to work building the house with the used material, used windows, used doors, used boards. Now they had to go out and buy some new boards because they didn't have 100% of all the boards that they needed out of these three houses. But they got the wood furnace and they got the gas furnace that are in the house out of these old houses. And they went ahead and they built the house. It took them 3 years to build it. Now she built the house for $7,000 cash out of pocket plus sweat equity. And in the process of building the house, when they got all through, the cash out of pocket plus their labor totaled something less than $15,000. $15,000. In other words, if the guy was out working for $2.30 an hour, which is what he was getting down here at that time, 68, 69, and 70, which was about minimum wage, and he went instead, he built a house. Now this house today, how much is it worth? Well, I don't know. What do you think a 6,000 square foot house is worth? And I'll leave it up to you. You figure it out. Now, I met a guy one time, got to tell you this story at our class reunion. His name was Henry Moore. Not one of the sharpest marbles in the drawer. I told you about the story of Henry. You know, academically, Henry was not the sharpest marble. He was not voted the most likely to succeed. Never went to college, never got a degree after his name. Just a common sense kind of guy. Just a blue-collar worker, electrician, betrayed. I'm not suggesting to you now that he's brain dead or that he's mentally retarded. Old Henry, old Henry's less than mentally retarded, let me assure you. Because at the class reunion, I said to Henry, I said, what are you doing? What did you do for your life? And he said, well, I was an electrician. And he said, what I'm retired on, he says, I got 7 houses. I live in one and I rent 6, and I've got my Social Security and my electrical union, electrician's union retirement. I don't know what his Social Security is. I called him up one day and they said that if I'd come down and sign up, they'd give me $805 a month. That's some years ago. So I declined. I dropped out of Social Security back in 78. Henry did, and he stuck with the program. That's where he lost most of his money, but he made it up in his 6 houses. Because see, these 6 houses worth $250,000 each. This guy's got about, you know, $1.5 million worth of real estate, and, you know, pushing $2 million worth of real estate, and he's renting them out and he's living off of the rent. Probably paying taxes like he always has. Now, I'd say the guy did pretty well, but here's what his trick was. See, he built all those houses himself. He didn't buy one for himself and two for the banker. He built 7 houses, and he built all 7 of them for Henry. He didn't build any for the bankers. He didn't pay interest and usury on those houses. He went out, bought a lot, took his sweat equity, took his money, bought the building materials, and built the houses. Now, that's the way Americans used to build our houses in this country prior to 1933. Before we got the big head, before we got smart and went to college, before we learned leverage, we used to have money. Before we learned all these fancy tricks, you know, about how to invest in Wall Street and market securities and CDOs and SIVs, we used to have real wealth in this country. People used to own their homes. They owned their automobiles. They had money in the bank and they had a year's supply of food sitting in the pantry. Everybody did. Today, you people ain't got 3 days. Today, you don't own your car. You don't own your house. You haven't got jack squat. You're buried in debt and waiting for the mark of the beast and waiting for your master to tell you when to stand up, sit down, come in, and go out. You know it and I know it. So what folly is this election BS, huh? You think Hillary Clinton's going to save you out of your morass? And I told you last time, first thing you got to do is get out of debt. And there's a way to do that. And subsistence and survival and how to make $100,000 on 25 acres or less are two schools that I use in conjunction with my business and tax school. I teach business school. I teach tax school. I teach courtroom strategy and procedure. I teach subsistence and survival. I teach how to make $100,000 on 25 acres. Boys and girls, the Ten Commandments is the superior economic model. I want to tell you, the Ten Commandments is the superior economic model. Now, if you want to vote for a perfect communist, you want to vote for Hillary Clinton. That girl is the quintessential communist. You can't pick a better candidate. If you like the status quo, if you like experience, if you like the way this game's being played, that's the girl for you. Now, politics has not produced for us, that is the Joe Sixpacks down here at the bottom, has not produced for us the seven houses that we own free and clear. Henry Moore, whether he knew or understood it or not, was practicing the Ten Commandments. When he avoided interest and usury, when he avoided commercial paper, when he got off his ass and went to work, when he produced property instead of profit, he produced great wealth for himself. He was practicing the Ten Commandments. I don't think he understood that. I don't know that Americans between 1787 and 1933 understood that their wealth, that their success, they owed to the Ten Commandments. I doubt seriously that they grasped what they had. But that was the answer. But when we adopted the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto back in 1913 by adopting the central bank and free education for all children in public school and a heavy progressive income tax, we shot ourselves in the foot. We shot ourselves in both feet at the same time. And so now you're scrambling for a solution. So may I suggest subsistence and survival and how to make $100,000 on 25 acres or less and my business school. Because if you're making less than $126,000 a year, boys and girls, you're not making as much as you were making in 1955. Milking cows. Hey, I'm out of time again, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there by reminding you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information, remember the Law School and Law Hour is on the website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you under public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.